Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rohn. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. It was a real get-right game, I feel, against the big-less Jazz. We talked about it, even though they were 2-1 in their three games prior. I thought we watched the Cavs play their worst quarter-by-quarter basketball of the season. That you couldn't attribute to starting Taco Fall and Kevin Pangos, and so it was really fun just to see them kind of cavalanche again and burn a 21-0 run on them.
It was definitely great to see. I was realizing as the game was going on that last year, I believe the game in Utah was the game that the Cavs inexplicably had no centers. And once again, full circle, the Cavs go into Utah, and this time it's their turn to play without centers. But we are going to take more of a macro approach. And when we go macro, it's usually a good idea to bring in some smart people. And this time we brought in two. When it's draft
season, two
very smart people. When it's draft time, we bring in draft experts. When we need to take a big picture look at the Cavs, especially with the Kobe Altman extension now being official, both he and JB Bickerstaff locked up for the long term, we are bringing in two experts. And first of all, making his Chase Down debut, Steve Jones Jr. of the Dunker Spot Podcast, as part of the BasketballNews.com network. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here. Let's talk some Cavs.
Hell yeah, baby. And rejoining us is friend of the podcast, Nikias Duncan. Once you come on a second time, Steve, you will graduate to friend of the podcast. But for now, it's just Nikias.
I'll take it. That's fine. I'm always behind Nikias.
Nikias, how are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Glad to be here.
Before we dive into Cavs stuff, just want to do the spiel we do every time we have you on, Nikias. Now we got Steve. Guys, you got to go listen to the Dunker Spot. It is so hard to start a national NBA pod and it be worth listening to. You know, like there are so many that try and fail to grab a foothold. And these dudes are so good. And you guys have such comprehensive coverage where you can talk about the big stuff, but you can also talk about like super duper granular stuff in a way that I know you're not BSing. It's just so fun to listen to. You guys clearly love doing it together, and I just can't shout out that podcast enough. It has become, you know, one of my absolute go-to national NBA pods, and I try to listen to at least part of every episode. You guys go so long, I can't do 2.5 hours every time.
Not all of us just sit at our desk all day listening to podcasts and processing charts and whatnot like I do, but I do want to start things off, and I once again co-sign what Carter is saying wholeheartedly, but I want to start with the Kobe Altman extension, because I think this is a really interesting point for the Cleveland Cavaliers, because over the last few years, one of the common kind of refrains from Carter and myself has been, we want to see some stability. And I know people will point out, well, you never know, like contracts in the NBA. How often does a coach see it out? How does it really mean that they're going to be here for the whole time? But what I really feel it does is it kind of allows, it's a signal both to the players, the staff, and throughout the organization that we have confidence in the long-term vision of these guys, and they can make decisions based on that security. Steve, do you feel that both Kobe Altman and JB Bickerstaff have done enough to kind of have confidence now that they're locked, for Cavs fans to have confidence in them being the guys now that they're locked up long-term?
I would say yes, especially when you talk about Kobe Altman and you look at what he had to navigate as far as going from the end of one era and trying to figure out how to get to the next and breaking things down, acquiring more assets, getting young pieces, and being able to kind of see the upswing of that. You don't always get to see that. And when you combine it with JB and you allow him to get that rope, and now he actually helps the turnaround, so you can tell there's a synergy. And you can tell, hey, the front office has one idea and the head coach can execute that vision. And when you have that kind of symphony between the front office and the coaching staff, you want to keep that as long as you can. Mm-hmm. So I think they've shown at least deserve a shot, especially based off this season with the roster building, with the ability to get the buy-in on the court to see how far this thing can go and get to the next phase. And I think for Cleveland to have those two have that security, you can kind of exhale a little bit. Like, okay, now we're ramping. Now we can ramp up a little bit as opposed to quote-unquote survival mode or what do we got next.
How much does Evan Mobley's presence kind of factor into that, Nikias? Like, do you think having Mobley around just kind of spring-loaded everything? Like, do you think this is a decision that they could have made if it was, let's say, Jalen Green or someone else that's very promising this draft? Scotty Barnes. Actually, Scotty Barnes would be a great example. Like, someone that's a hell of a rookie, but maybe not the foundational piece. Like, do you think that would impact that sort of decision-making?
Maybe a little bit, but again, I think the pick would have kind of had to be a disaster for you not leaning this direction, because Kobe has done such a solid job since he's been there of kind of bridging the gap and building young talent. Last time I was on, we were talking about what this Cleveland Cavaliers team could look like going into this season. I think I said, like, and it feels like they're a piece or two away from really being in that play-in picture, so they're trending in the right direction. Didn't expect this.
They overshot all of my. Neither did we.
Hell, overshot everything. But like, you could at least see the rough outline of where they were going and what they were trying to build. And so, the fact that they got Evan Mobley and he just looks like a surefire star in the making. Like, I think it makes it a little bit easier for you to settle in with this front office. The job that JB Bickerstaff has done implementing Mobley, just the ecosystem in general. I think it's easier. It makes sense that they feel comfortable moving forward with them.
I mean, ultimately, like, the job of the GM of the coach is to make the team be pretty good. Like, and the team is finally pretty good, you know? And this is the first time since 2003 that the team has been pretty good in the absence of LeBron James. We talk about it all the time. Our former editor at Fear the Sword, David Zabak, has said a billion times, this team has to find a way to establish some kind of positive on-court and off-court culture that doesn't involve LeBron James. And I think you could, if you were a skeptic of this, kind of say, okay, they had half a good season and now they're not after, you know, 2-3 years of not a lot of fun, and all of a sudden they're ready to lock up these dudes for 6 years. And like, yeah, I kind of am. Like, you know, like they have cycled so many people through in these kind of seven or so gap years between the LeBron presences that, you know, weren't able to build that kind of positive culture. So like, when you do have a team that seems to like each other, seems to be a little bit more than the sum of their parts, like, yeah, I'm not trying to let that lightning out of the bottle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things is just kind of process over results. Like, if things were to fall apart and you had even further injuries and whatnot, and you fall out of the playoff picture, or maybe you fall into the play-in and whatnot, like, that would be unfortunate. But yeah, I think often with the NBA, you need to kind of judge the process more than the results. What would you guys say is kind of the next step along that process that you would like to see the Cavs take? Like, is there something that jumps out to you as this is a logical next step for this team to kind of try to make, whether it be internally, whether it be through acquisitions of more talent? What kind of jumps out to you when it comes to this Cavs roster construction?
Well, go ahead, Nikias. That's your ministry.
Don't do me like this. No, I think the next step, like, one, Darius Garland is already starting to answer that question, because I think the big question was going to be like, okay, who's going to be the guy? Who is going to orchestrate the offense? Who's going to be the lead dog? And the fact that Garland's taking the step that he has as a creator, if he doesn't outright answer it, he at least gives you a pretty darn good option. So if you want to nitpick Cleveland going to the next step, like, maybe one more guy.
Yeah,
that kind of leads into what you're doing with Colin Sexton moving forward. And if you project him to be that guy, like, what is his ideal role? But overall, I think if you can get that wing type scorer that can take some pressure off of Garland, like, I think that's what they're missing to really take themselves up a notch.
I always joke that the Cavs, their biggest need has been a big playmaking wing, which makes them like every basketball team in the history of basketball. But they really could use one. Like, you know, because Darius is small, you know, there's no way around it. And, you know, we saw the Warriors. They just threw Andrew Wiggins on him and said, hey, you're just going to see an army of limbs every time you try to get in kind of get into the paint. And I really did think it flustered him. And I do think there's going to be some personal growth there for him, both physically and the way he's reading the game. But like the reality is, the release valve that can see over the defense and kind of beat up those teams that overload you. I do think that is something the team is just straight up, they don't have right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the areas that you kind of see Garland still struggle at times is when you're dealing with the length. And some of that is growth that he still needs to make individually. Some of that it comes down to personnel and not having other guys that can alleviate that pressure. But I think one of the things that's always been so encouraging to me about having Garland on this team is I don't know if he necessarily needs to be the number one scorer on whatever the final version of this Cavs team is. Like if he can be like a 21 and 8 guy. I think
pretty much is right now.
Right, which is what he already is. I think that's like scalable, right? Like you can always put in other guys, whether it is a wing ball handler and the growth that he's shown off ball, the time that he spent as a shooting guard coming up and whatnot. Like that really lends itself to kind of being kind of, and I don't say this in a derogatory way, but like a poor man Steph, right? Where he can play with so many different types of players. And honestly, even Evan Mobley can play with a lot of different types of players because there's just so much kind of playmaking talent and on and off ball IQ. Steve, is there an area that in Garland's game that you really kind of notice that still jumps out as, an area of growth for him?
So if I were to say an area of opportunity for Darius Garland, probably just handling more aggressive defenses. Mm-hmm. And dealing with the size and the length, he has such a load as far as having to create for this team, but it's can you manage getting in the paint when they're in a drop, when they're faking at you, when there's size, when there's length, when there's help, when there's no easy outlets. We know you can shoot, we know you can get in the paint and score, but now you kind of have to have that balancing act. So for me, we've seen times where he's been really, really aggressive and it's paid off. We've also seen times where, okay, what's going on? Is it the defense that's getting to him? Are we not making the right decision? Are we attacking too quickly? So that would probably be my biggest area of growth. But as far as the steps that I was looking for him to take this season, mm-hmm. he's checked off majority of the boxes. Yeah. The playmaking growth has been huge. The passing has been amazing.
And it's not like, you know, there's a YouTube video that's been going around kind of comparing his game to Nash. And I actually think it's a really interesting comparison in the sense that, like, I think we all thought that the version of Darius that would be an all-star was going to be that guy who had that kind of volcanic scoring ability, the guy who might go off and get 35 or 40 on any given night just by, you know, hitting 6 or 7 or 8 threes. And that really hasn't been his game. Like, what do you see in his ability to pretty much orchestrate this offense, keep it functional, despite some like pretty obvious spacing issues, especially given that Lauri Markkanen hasn't been able to, you know, hit the ocean from a boat and like kind of like keep this offense humming despite like not having like his counting stats are not crazy. But it feels like, I don't know, Steve, like what do you think in terms of his game just as that kind of playmaker, despite not being a big counting stats guy? Like 20 and 8 is good, but it's not in this league. That's in the juiced ball era, it's not that crazy.
Hey, we're not in the juiced ball era anymore, Carter. It's honest stats. And with the return of honest basketball, the Cavs are also back. They were sitting out the last couple seasons in protest.
Yeah, it was really just a philosophical thing. That's why
it really was. And now we're comfortable to move forward.
Well, actually, I think now that you mentioned it, I look at this roster, it's kind of built towards Garland in a way. Because you have so many different bigs. You can run action with all of them. You have guys who can pick and pop, pick and roll. You can run handoffs for him. So he can do different things and have the kind of usage where he doesn't necessarily have to be that scorer. He can kind of let the game come to him and play a little bit more naturally. And that's kind of been the fun for me. So as far as that goes, I'd like to see him do that. I'd like to see him do it more.
Yeah, he's been truly awesome. The other thing that I don't think anyone saw coming was the defense being as good as it is. Still third in the league. Nekias, they're starting Lauri Markkanen at small forward. We've been waiting for it to not work. They're starting Darius, a point guard who has not been a particularly good defender. Why is this defense as good as it is in your opinion, and how sustainable do you think it is?
There's just so much size and mobility in the front court. Like, Darius Garland isn't a great on-ball defender. The energy has picked up. Screen navigation has got a little bit better, but he's still not top tier by any stretch of the imagination. And Lauri Markkanen is not a defender to write home about. But honestly, with those guys on the perimeter, like all you have to do is kind of funnel the ball inside to Jared Allen, inside to Evan Mobley. And both of those guys have so much length, so much mobility, just the way that they're able to cover ground, it almost, I don't want to say it doesn't matter because it's the NBA, but like it doesn't matter as much as you think it would on paper. And I think that's probably been the biggest miscalculation for me on this team, because you look, you see Lauri at the three, it's like, okay, he can't defend wings. What are we doing here? But like, as long as he isn't getting flat out torched, you have 2 7-footers behind him, and both of those guys can navigate space. Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, I need to apologize to Lauri Markkanen. I did not see this happening, and it works consistently. And like, when you get to a point where Cleveland has him and Kevin Love defending an action, they switch and it works, you need to rethink things. So it's kind of just to piggyback on Nikias's point, it's been the buy-in. And like, I think Lauri being able to hold his own is huge. Evan Mobley, what he does as far as glue is huge. And as Nikias said, you have 2 7-footers. It's hard to space both of them. So even if you get beat, the help defense mindset is there, and there's someone meeting you there. So like, their help in rotations has been the most fun to watch for me. Their mindset defensively on that end has been great. And even at times when they get beat off the bounce, the help is there. I do wonder what happens if one of them is out and now you can really space one of them, as Utah kind of did for like an 8-minute stretch there in the first half, it felt like. But no, I love Cleveland's defense. That buy-in is great.
Do you think it is like are you seeing like the kind of polish you want to see, or like do you think they're kind of efforting and sizing their way through those kind of mistakes? Because to me, I still feel like I see them mess up. It's just their margin for error is so much better than a lot of other teams because of their size.
They have the margin for error, but they are really good at rotating for the majority of the time. So when I watch them, I see even when it's not perfect, they can rotate their way out of it. So they, even if they send 2 or 3 guys to help, they'll rotate out and help each other and get back out and recover. And that's where I was like, okay, there's really something here, as opposed to, hey, we just have tall people behind us. It's okay no matter what happens to us. So
they also don't really get destabilized that often, because no one likes to attack just straight ISO in the NBA for the most part. I feel like a lot of, like, with the defense set shelled behind Lauri, when people are on him, you know, like it's a little bit more of a tricky thing to try to get past him and score. And then when they call up a screener for him, they're like, okay, I guess we'll just switch it. And now Evan Mobley's guarding your your three. Like, they don't want that either. So like, it does feel like a lot of teams' offenses just kind of get out of whack because they're like, wait, what are we supposed to even do here?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's the other thing. There's no real true pressure point unless you want to put Darius Garland in action. That's a different conversation. But other than that, there's no one thing that, hey, we can count on every single time, because Cleveland mixes things up and they got that size.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing from you guys kind of indicates at least a confidence in the sustainability of what the Cavs are doing, because right now the defense seems to be the backbone that's driving this team. And it's not like Cavaliers fans have insecurities for no reason. We've seen things go sideways, and you look at a team like the Atlanta Hawks, who had so much success last season, and some of the conversations we had last year was, can the Cavs kind of replicate what the Hawks did this season and kind of make that leap with internal growth and maybe a couple additions and whatnot? Do you guys see this kind of being something that moving forward the Cavs can continue to build on? Or is there some concerns or red flags that you've identified that could kind of maybe foreshadow a little bit of a slip?
I think in terms of the defense, like, I'm pretty confident it can stick moving forward. Mm-hmm. Because with Jared Allen's very young, Evan Mobley's very young. As you said, like, there are still some slip-ups, but there's such a large margin for error there. Like, they're going to get better with more experience. So I imagine, like, as Evan Mobley continues to grow into his body, just the general game flow, they're going to get better. So I don't think that's going to be much of an issue. Like, the red flags for me are all on the offensive end.
Mm.
It's
agreed.
Like, where's the shooting coming from? If you do throw size on Darius Garland, where's the shot creation coming from?
Sorry to cut you off, but how much of that, just to better understand your point, how much of that has to do with the roster as it's currently, like, who's available now? Like, if they had Colin Sexton and Ricky Rubio as an example, would you still have this level of concern? Or is this kind of a long-term offensive concern when it comes to the pairing of the guys that you kind of consider to be foundational players?
I think it's certainly more heightened now just because those guys are out.
Right.
I do think even with Colin Sexton in there, like, they're still the size problem. Because one of the concerns that I had about them was like, okay, Garland's good, Sexton's good. They're like 6'1 and 6'2. So if you are looking at it within a playoff lens, like, if you face a team that has multiple wings, like, let's say Cleveland picks, like, Boston isn't good this year. That's a whole nother thing. But, like, in theory, you get a Boston matchup. All right, we have Marcus Smart to throw on the guy, or we can just throw either of the Jays on the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to throw in some other extra, we're just going to switch and let's see what you do.
Yeah.
And so, well, like, that problem could – I think that problem persists either way. And obviously it's worse now because now it's just Garland. And we saw in the Golden State game, you put a size on Darius Garland. It's like, okay, where is this coming from? Like, Evan Mobley wasn't ready for that. So, yeah,
do
I think
Evan Mobley is going to get ready for that on the offensive end? Because that's kind of the one wild card is right now he's a super-duper good complementary offensive piece. But he is certainly not – a consistent go-to score. Do you see that in his future as a way to kind of like ameliorate this kind of weakness for them? Or do you think it needs to come in the form of like a big pick and roll ball handler? Because no matter how good Mobley gets, that probably isn't going to be his primary game.
Right. Like, I think they're going to need the big wing creator at some point. Like, Mobley,
well, those are super cheap and easy to get.
Yeah, you know, just snap your fingers. You just get them at Walmart. But, no, like, ideally you find the big wing creator somewhere. Mobley is further ahead offensively than I thought he would be at this stage. I think he will be able to scale up. I don't know if he scales up to Darius Garland is now your number two guy now.
Mm,
yeah. Like, that's just something I need to see a little bit more of. But – yeah, I would prefer that they find that guy somehow.
Yeah, Steve, there's a reason Justin and I have had eyes on Brandon Ingram. we're watching the Pelicans with great interest to see how bad it gets over there.
An unhealthy amount of lust, although I've cooled off a little bit. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I think they need all the good stories they can get, and his recent play has definitely been good for the Pelicans. But when you look at the approaching trade deadline, obviously the Cavs are in a unique situation because they still do have all of their future picks. They have some pretty good second round picks with Houston and San Antonio's. Steve, do you think that the Cavs should be willing to give up their first round pick this year? And if so, what type of player or situation would you see that being worthwhile for them?
I don't know that they should be willing to do it right now. Just because you found something, you have a base, you have belief, you have buy-in. I don't know if you have to take that step now. Mm-hmm. You can still use that, add another piece to what you've got and continue to build that way. And then, hey, if it's gone another way, hey, we need to go ahead and make another leap. I don't think they have to do it right now. If they were to do something like that, I would probably want some sort of shooter. Buddy Hield always pops in my head, but I don't know why.
I mean, Buddy, with these bigs and with Darius feeding them, is a pretty sexy addition.
So speaking of lusting, my God, I was giving him just terrible eyes sitting on my couch watching the Cavs and Kings game. My goodness, that man pulls the trigger at just all the right times. That's what I was looking for.
Like that. They do not have a reckless 3-point shooter. You know that, just because Darius, that ain't his game. He doesn't like to just pull and pull and pull. And Buddy is not ashamed to do so. No, like, I mean,
this is where I miss Rubio. They're running him off staggers.
You're telling me, man.
hey, Rondo took 8 threes in a game, so maybe it's Rondo.
The Cavs don't have a reckless ball. This is Chetty erasure. What is this?
Come on. Shout out Jetty, man. Yeah, that's true. And honestly, even Kevin Love is now taking some wild shots, and he's making them, which has been a really, really enjoyable development this year.
I do want to ask, going back to the trade thing, like, I mean, what kind of player do you think Kobe Altman should be trying his hardest to pick up? Like, is it going for, you know, a big name like a Caris LeVert? Because you're going to have to give up some legitimate compensation to get a player like that. Or would you, if you're Kobe, are you saying, hey, Justin Holiday, you look pretty nice. You can just play spot minutes on the wing and get us through the year. Like, Nekias, like, how big in big game hunting are you going if you're Kobe Altman at the deadline this year?
I don't think you go super large right now, especially with the injuries that you're dealing with. And this feels like, you know, the year one leap for them. They're not ready for Eastern Conference contention right now. Like, this is just a good playoff team right now, which is a huge step for them. So get a vet in the room. Like, I like the Justin Holiday mention. Eric Gordon, I think I've seen his name floating around there. Like, I feel like that makes more sense than we're going to send multiple firsts for Caris LeVert to be a bigger, worse shooting Colin Sexton. Like, that doesn't really do it for me.
Multiple firsts,
the slander.
Yeah.
Like, Caris is cool. Like, I just don't know if that's what you need.
What did Caris LeVert do? This man
that
is
was spicy.
Like, his reputation. Don't get me wrong. It's one of the nicest guys in the league, right? And the Caris is just, oh my god.
I don't have beef with him. It's just like there's a type of shot creation that Cleveland needs. I don't know if he's the answer, especially for the price they would probably take to pry him out of Indy. That's all I'm saying.
My take on this has basically been, if they were to give up a first, and I'd only want to move maybe this year's first, because when you look at the Cavs right now, they have six guys 24 and under that you're kind of prioritizing their development and whatnot. You do have those second round picks as well to bring in more young talent. You can only really develop so many players at one time. And if they were to give up a first round pick, I think the one thing that I'd want to see from that player beyond their ability to help this season is a little bit of term on the contract and some level of confidence that, hey, if we showcase this player, so let's say LeVert or Buddy Hield, if we showcase this player in a playoff setting, they may be an asset in a consolidation move moving forward in the following summer, right? Like, if you're going to give up that first round pick, then maybe all of a sudden you're combining them with other players in the roster, some of your future picks, and making a larger splash for a more worthwhile player. Do you guys kind of agree with that assessment, or would you still kind of rather prioritize bringing in somebody after the lottery with
an innings eater?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I definitely see where you're coming from there. Like, I guess my question is just, where does Cleveland see this season going? Mm-hmm. Like, how aggressive do they plan on being? Because, like, you can be a buyer, but there are different levels to being a buyer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that. And I think that's why I'm kind of aligned with Justin's philosophy of, like, if you are going to give up draft compensation, it better be someone who either is going to be part of your core moving forward, which for just, you know, like Ricky's expiring deal on a first, you're probably not going to get someone so good that you're like, they're locked in. They're going to be part of who we are for the next 4 years. Then you really hope to find someone that's like, hey, they're going to scratch an itch for us. They're going to solve a need for us. And we're going to be able to, you know, if we need to consolidate talent, we can do it, you know? And I think that's why a guy like Eric Gordon, you know, which you hear rumbles that like Houston might want a first for him. You're like, no, thank you. Cause you can't really do those. You can't do that for us in a way that like even a Caris LeVert, who's still got just a little bit of extra shine on him as a prospect, can. So I'm kind of in no man's land here. I don't really want to
look
trade
at you fence sitting. Not only are you fence sitting right now,
I know.
You let Nikias off the hook. You should have thrown that question right back in his face and asked the man, what should their goal for this season be? Like you say, it depends on what the goals for this postseason and what the rest of this year should be. But what do you think realistically the Cavs' expectations should be?
Ooh, take that, Nikias.
Yeah, yeah.
Justin's a professional. Apparently, I'm just some fraud.
Well, you know what? You use some $5 words already in this podcast, so that's what we keep you around here for.
Didn't know we had Mark Phillips, the instigator, down here. But all right.
You should know. You've seen enough of my movies.
Fair enough. But, again, like, I don't see Eastern Conference Finals potential for them right now. So, like, I think fill the gaps with a vet that can kind of help you short-term, keep the good vibes going, and then look to make a move in the offseason if you see it. So that's why I'm looking more, get your Holiday that helps you this season, just to fill some gaps for you, get you an Eric Gordon. Like I get the thinking of getting like a guy like LeVert in the room. You have more money. You can kind of flip him later. I would just be worried about that backfiring and what it could do.
So, he's been hurt a lot.
So that's where I'm just kind of like, again, like be a low level buyer, if that makes sense. Like look to improve along the margins, like look for your Rubio replacement. Not necessarily we need the guard of the future right now. Cause I don't think this is their time to kind of strike.
That makes perfect sense. I do want to move to the postseason.
Oh, I wanted Steve's goals for this season. Well,
fine.
Yeah. We are on the postseason. Don't you? We're already there. Steve, what do you think the goal should be?
This is a contentious pod, man.
This is. I like it.
You could argue they may have hit it already, just already being at this stage of the season and being outside of the play-in. I'd probably say, let's have a really good first-round series. Let's keep this momentum going. Let's keep the buy-in. Let's push and see what we can do.
I kind of think that their goal should be to win a series. I don't know if they will, but that should be the goal.
I've got a goal for you, Carter. I want them to put enough supporting talent around the young guys that they can fail based on their own shortcomings. Because
that's a good way to frame it.
If you don't have enough talent around these guys and it's just kind of 20-point blowouts in the playoffs and whatnot, there's not the same kind of game film of seeing what adjustments teams make in a really close playoff series and whatnot, what shortcomings you Darius Garland has that he needs to work on in the offseason and whatnot. Like, I want them to be put in a position to fail in some ways, right? Because realistically speaking, teams this young are going to fail. They're not going to win a championship this season. I think that's okay to admit. But like that was a big part of why I thought they should start gunning for the play-in this season. Like, when I was predicting kind of high 30s for wins, I was like, put enough supporting talent around that they can at least get that taste of competition and you get more usable game film. So for me, that is the big goal for this season that's still kind of remaining.
That makes perfect sense. I do want to talk postseason since you blew up my segue last time. I'm doing it again. Nikias, who is the team that is currently in the top four in the East that should want to avoid the Cavaliers the most? And who is the team in the top four in the East that the Cavaliers should want to avoid the most?
Ooh, I hope I get this question too. I can't
wait to see what Nikias says. You will get it next.
Yeah. You will, unless Carter changes the subject.
Unbelievable, this guy.
Sheesh. I think the team that should want to avoid Cleveland is Miami.
I agree. This was my pick of a month or so ago.
And I say full disclosure, like, I would still favor Miami in a series.
I think
but just in terms of what Miami has in the half court, I think you can restrict them with length. Mm-hmm. This isn't a super athletic team. They want to grind you down to begin with, and Cleveland just has, again, 3 7-footers in the front court. And Miami, for years now, they have struggled with teams that have these quick point guards that can push and transition and kind of scramble you early. And Darius Garland can do that. Miami does not have a ton of size that I love in a playoff setting. And that could be problematic when you're looking at the Garland-Jared Allen pick and roll, the Garland-Evan Mobley pick and roll. So that's where I'm just kind of like, this could get a little bit ugly for Miami. Cleveland's already won 2 games, though. The Heat were without Jimmy and Bam in both of those. So, like, you don't take that with so much. But just stylistically, that seems to be the type of team. It kind of gives Miami problems in both of the areas they really struggle with, a bunch of size and then just athleticism and transition. I think Cleveland could kind of pose threats in both areas.
Steve, what's your read on it?
Team that they should want to see. I'm going to go curveball here. I'm going to say the Bulls.
Yeah, that's my pick. Why do you say the Bulls?
I'm going to go with the Bulls, and you hope that you have enough size and length to stay in front of their top two guys, which, I mean, DeMar's playing insane, but let's get some good tests. Let's make you work on the other end, and let's see if we can just defend our way to an ugly one, make you play gross, and win this one.
Would you favor the Bulls in that series as well?
I'd probably say Bulls in 7.
Ooh. Damn. That's not bad for the number one team in the conference right now.
That's kind of my thinking there. Well, the reason I would never pick Miami is Spoelstra scares the living hell out of me. Like, I think he's the best coach. And there's just so much experience and so much, like, winning experience and Heat culture with Miami that, like, I think that experience is just going to beat the Cavs over the head over a shorter series than the talent would indicate. Whereas the Chicago Bulls, I think the Cavs can at least impact their ability to get to the rim and finish well there. Maybe some ghosts of playoffs pass pop up for DeMar DeRozan, all the memories in Cleveland come up for him, and
we'll never be able to respect him, guys. I'm sorry,
we just can't do it.
Too many years of ingrained
Wow.
Active disrespect.
Can't do it. Can't do it. So I think just kind of the lack of experience with the Chicago Bulls in comparison to Miami, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, to me, that kind of makes it the ideal matchup if you have to pick one of those top four.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Nikias, on Miami. But Justin, all of Justin's counters are very, very good. I think the team that the Cavs should want to avoid, it's a no-brainer, but I'm curious what you guys think. Nikias, you go first.
I have Brooklyn at the top of my list.
I disagree. I thought you were going more.
I thought you were going Milwaukee.
I don't want to see that. I think Milwaukee sweeps us out of the building.
I have Milwaukee second on the list for what it's worth. So, like, I'm not awful, you guys. But I just don't know if the Cavs could score enough with Brooklyn in a playoff setting.
Here's the thing. You got big game James. You got Kyrie only playing half of the games.
and he'll actually have to come to Cleveland again if he wants to play in the series, which he's thus far avoided.
That's the point.
So he might not even play a game.
Kyrie's only games being in a hostile environment would be hilarious.
And it will be hostile. I promise you that.
Yeah, I'm definitely going Milwaukee. Like what Drew Holiday could do to Darius Garland with Chris Middleton and Giannis and all the length and know-how that the Bucks have is terrifying.
You got Drew who is like tailor-made to ruin Darius Garland's life because he won't get screened and he's huge. He'll beat the crap out of him on the other end. And then you got Giannis who is like the one thing that Evan Mobley can't handle yet is super duper strong long dudes
that'll go right into your chest.
Yeah, he like Giannis will try to put Mobley in the basket on every single play, and Mobley will hold his own every now and again, but like that's a position where in most matchups I feel like the Cavs have the advantage, and they very significantly would be disadvantaged at the four against Milwaukee. And like, I think Milwaukee, it could be a non-competitive series. Whereas I think Brooklyn's natural inclinations to not give a crap will keep things, a little tighter until they really get threatened.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think what percent chance, Steve, would you say that the Cavs can win a playoff series?
40.
I think that's a good number. I think it's a good number.
Now, I will say that increases if they can somehow get to the four seed.
That's fair.
Like if they get to the four and they face Philly, all bets are off.
Mm-hmm.
But I also said the same thing with the Knicks last year, so don't take me.
Yeah, but this team actually has talent, so that's a big difference.
Sheesh. That's a good shot.
Wow. That is a kill shot, Carter. And I thought you were going to start going gentler because the NPR voice was coming out as your daughter went to bed.
I am NPR voicing. And yes, it is Millie's bedtime. So here we are. I did want, before we go, because we're at about the 40-minute mark of the pod, before we go, I wanted to, in respect and reverence for the dunker spot in the episode on some free throws.
Oh, man, nice. I'm all in.
Because I love the random insanity of your free throws. And I'm going to start with one of your favorite segments, start, bench, cut. Which, by the way, guys, start, sit, cut. There's a natural rhythm to it. Start, bench, cut. Doesn't sound as good. But that's all right.
He's got notes.
I got notes. Start, bench, cut, Nikias. Lauri Markkanen, Dean Wade, Lamar Stevens.
Oh my God,
poor Larry.
And I thought this was too deep of a cut, and then you guys talked about Paul Watson Jr. on your last episode.
I wanted him so badly as a two-way for the Cavs.
He's solid. Okay. Gonna start Lauri. I'm going to bench / sit Lamar Stevens. I'm going to cut Dean Wade.
Oh wow, Dean Wade slander. Jeez.
Dean Wade slander. That's so disappointing. Steve, your choices.
I start Lauri, I sit Wade, I cut Lamar Stevens.
Stevens slander well.
I love Lamar Stevens for this team defensively, but
he's been kicking ass lately. Next one, who would you rather have for the next five full seasons, Evan Mobley or Anthony Davis?
Oh, Mobley. I wasn't even asked first. Mobley.
Hell yeah. That's why Rondo came to Cleveland. he knew where the next 5 years are going.
Nikias. I am also going to go Mobley.
Isn't that crazy to say?
That's bonkers. I love it. I love it.
He's so good.
He really is. And like, how much of your answer there? I do want to stick on this one for a second. How much of your answer on that is a result of Mobley being so good or AD like having such a weird last year and a half?
Yes. you go ahead, Steve.
Well, for me, it was Mobley being good and also just AD health overall. 5 years is a long time, man.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's just great. It's just crazy to say. And then I have one last free throw for us. How many players, and I would like you to list them if you can, should currently make the all defense team ahead of Evan Mobley?
Ooh, this is a good one. Nikias, go ahead. Go first.
That is a good one. Okay, first, we're listing Evan Mobley as a forward, correct?
Yes, yeah. We are.
So just stick to the forward.
There you go. Yeah. I just want, can I? So I want to make sure I got it right before I answer the question. What's wrong with that? How many players should make it above Evan Mobley? That's a good question. Four.
Ooh, let's hear him.
So you have him just outside of the all defense team as a rookie.
I'm going to try to solidify things before we record tonight, but right now I think he's out for me right now.
Who do you got in front of him? Who are your no doubt forwards in front of him?
I have Mikal Bridges. I have Draymond Green. Fair. I have Giannis and I have Jared Vanderbilt right now.
What are we doing?
You're not coming back on the podcast. Steve,
get out.
He's been good.
That is such a hipster take. You probably are right. You have probably watched so much film, but my God, Vanderbilt.
Ass. Yes.
I like that we're being dismissive of smaller names. No, we're already big time. Steve, who do you have?
I'd probably say the same number four. It gets tricky with the positioning because you can flip it and make it work, but I'd probably say Draymond, Giannis. Probably still say Jimmy. Miles Turner counts as a forward.
I don't think Miles Turner should. I think he's a center.
Here's the tricky part. He received votes at forward last year, so I'm just confused.
So what that means is he's probably going to miss it, because if he's splitting votes from forward and center, he might slip off the list.
Well, just wait till Andrew Wiggins gets his push.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, he was really, really good at the Warriors game.
He's been legitimately really good.
Today is not the day for me to slander him.
But while we're complaining about positions, why is DeRozan listed as a guard?
Why is he listed as a guard? Thank you.
He's been a guard his whole career.
He hasn't been a guard since Toronto.
He's been a guard his whole career. Nikias.
Vindication.
Nikias told me, hey, he's been the three ever since he left Toronto, and I showed him proof that he hasn't. He started as a two in San Antonio, and I haven't heard back from him since.
I saw that tweet. That was great.
It's a bad bit. It's a very bad bit.
The truth.
Oh, man.
That door doesn't do.
He's almost aged his way out of relevance for Nikias as well. So that's probably
this is also a bad bit. What is this?
That's a very good bet. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think you're probably right. I don't think he's an all defense team player in the end, unless the Cavs take another jump.
Yet.
But with that said, I mean, I don't know, when's the last time a rookie has been in consideration for all defense? I feel like it, even the fact that we're having that conversation is indicative of like what a freak this kid is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the fun things about the Cavs this season is, like, even when you're identifying, well, they're not quite there yet, the starting point is just so much further ahead of where we could have anticipated this season. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, like, at this, like, he's probably a year away from having it on merit. How many years away he is from actually making the team is another discussion. That's going to put me on a soapbox that I don't want to get on right now.
Yeah, probably zero.
But he's very good.
Steve's about to jump through the camera at you right now.
He's going to be good enough to make the team very soon.
I think he's good enough to make the team right now. He's just, I mean, if you're fifth in a group of four, you're good enough to make the team right now.
Yeah,
that is wild.
No, you guys are both good enough to make this team. What a podcast, guys. Thank you so much for coming on. For all our listeners, make sure you guys are checking out the Dunker Spot podcast. If you're watching live on YouTube right now, make sure you like and subscribe. Click that notification bell so you know when we're going live next. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cats.